The Blast from Our Past Network.
Good evening. Tonight I'm going to gift you innate transcendence at the greatest expense.
Ah! Mesmerizing.
Talking Back.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Talking Back. This is the podcast where we like to chat about past achievements in movies, comics, video games, and more. This week, we're going to be covering more, and we're going to be talking about what happens when a wealthy recluse hosts four accomplished guests at his stylish mansion for a once-in-a-lifetime experience, but their intrigue soon turns into terror. Dean, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tim, could you pass some of that cocaine over here?
If I had some to share, I would.
You're not passing it around the table right now?
Well, the ship only comes in once a year, Dean.
Ah, okay.
There's not a whole lot to pass around to other people.
That's fair.
Would you like some 50-year-old whiskey?
Yeah, hey.
That I can
yes,
share.
Yes, I would. I definitely would.
Dean, this week we're covering Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities, Episode 7, titled The Viewing. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb, because I know you've never seen this before. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you enjoyed the hell out of The Viewing.
You're right, Tim. I enjoyed the hell out of The Viewing. It's so my shit. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, because we just came off a Patreon episode where you're pitching Manhunter to everybody. And you're like, yeah. It's like the 80s. It's the synth. It's the lights and the visuals. And then I sat down to watch this like 2 days later and I'm like, oh yeah, Dean's going to love this. And then throw in
I loved it.
Horror to that as well.
Yep.
I'm like,
yep.
He's going to love the shit out of this. As I do.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, The Cabinet of Curiosities is an 8-episode horror anthology series collecting personally curated stories from famous directors that are equally sophisticated and horrific. The Viewing, here's the reason why we're doing this, is because I can't stop talking about this guy, Panos Cosmatos. He directed this. Okay. He's only done a few things. Okay, but they're all complete bangers. Okay, for anybody who's maybe new to the podcast, he did the movie Beyond the Black Rainbow, he did the movie Mandy, and he did this, The Viewing. And he's got one coming out this year or next year called Necrocosm, and it just sounds
okay.
Fucking awesome. Go read the synopsis for Necrocosm.
Yeah, I'd never seen anything from him before. I knew about both those movies, and they've both been pretty high on my watch list, like actually on the watch list. Like I've been so close to pressing play on Mandy so many times, and then it's just like loses to something else in that moment. Like just so many times it's been right there, and I've even pulled it up. And definitely now, you know, now I'm gonna get to it right away. It's moved itself to the top because of how much I enjoyed The Viewing.
Yeah, Mandy's probably my favorite. That's his most popular. You know, Nick Cage is in that. It's so great. That is by far his most aggressive entry.
I would say
that The Viewing is his like most accessible to a modern audience. I think
when you look
at Mandy, you're getting into some real fucked up shit.
I
love it. It's so great. Beyond the Black Rainbow, I find is a little bit more artistic but also with some like really, really weird but beautiful stuff. More of like an art house film, I would say, in a way, Beyond the Black Rainbow. And then Mandy hits on like the mainstream, just bizarre, but awesome kind of horror terror vibe. It's great.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it looks awesome. Looks like it's right up my alley.
So, I mean, several of the things that you would have noticed in The Viewing is his style and will come across in the other stuff that he does. Like the art direction is very unique to what he's doing. The storytelling, the sort of the way he leans into drug use and definitely psychedelics, like his stuff is very psychedelic. The soundtrack, very synth wavy. It's always like that. So he definitely has a style and a flavor, and I love it. The synthwave in this one, in The Viewing, was composed by Daniel Lopatin, also known as OPN. I think you know him. Do you know him?
It's not ringing a bell.
Okay, well, he has several albums, but he also did the score for Good Time, which we've covered. And
oh, okay,
he did the
cool.
score,
and that's great.
And he did the score for Uncut Gems.
Oh, nice. Okay, awesome.
But really, yeah, he did like the main theme. I don't think he did everything, but...
Yeah,
there was some tracks in here. I was getting like a Big Trouble in Little China vibe from time to time out of this one. It was,
yep,
it was pretty
totally.
Neat.
I was thinking the same thing. I was definitely feeling Carpenter. And when I feel the Carpenter music, I usually go to Big Trouble for sure.
So kind of just like overall, like what are your thoughts on this piece, The Viewing?
Yeah, overall, it's... I really, really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it from like second number one. Looks so cool. Sounds really great, like we've been talking about. There's some great performances in this. It's the type of, especially in like an hour sort of, you know, a short sitting. I like this long drawn out talking of where most of it is just talking. Most of it's just sitting around. People talking to each other, and then things just go wild at the end. And that's like, I like that kind of formula a lot. And so it just, yeah, it really lined up for me perfectly. I was enjoying kind of like every minute. The way it was shot was so neat. Sometimes the way the light was like reflecting in the room, sometimes it seemed like you could see through people.
Yeah.
Like because of how the light was just like, I don't know. It was awesome. It just looked so cool that most of the episode takes place in this just like amazing looking room. And they give you so much time to look at the room when you're walking into it that it's just, yeah, when you get to sit there then for like the rest of the episode, it's such a cool room to be in. It just had a lot of the things that I usually find very appealing when I sit down to watch like a weird, messed up type movie. These are the types of things I really like.
Yeah, same. Like it's a little over 50 minutes. And by minute 40, you still have no idea what's going on. It's just a bunch of people in the room talking. And you're like, is this, what, this is horror somehow? It doesn't seem like horror. It seems just awesome and peaceful. But
I like when we're at that time, when we're at like 40 minutes in, I'm wondering if we're ever going to go anywhere. Like, I'm wondering if it's just going to end up that they'd finish talking and the episode's over.
Yeah. Now, before every one of these episodes, Guillermo del Toro comes out and he reads like a little, isn't read, but he like narrates a little bit about what you're about to watch. So this is what he narrates for The Viewing. What happens when the collector becomes the collected? When a ruthless wonder hunter finds someone or something with a will, a hunger far greater than his own. Printed in heavy paper, embossed, not quite pocket size, an invitation to a viewing. A night of pleasure for like-minded folk. A night that might also prove to be their last. So this invitation that he mentions here is an invitation that gets sent out to four people. We sort of meet them like really early on. And they're being invited to this guy's house. His name is Lionel Lassiter. Played absolutely perfectly by Peter Weller.
Crushes it.
Yeah. And he's basically extremely wealthy. He's a collector of things. He wants to show these four people something very impressive. He chooses them kind of distinctly from different genres of work that they're in. They're all top class in what they do. He says from their distinct worlds, they may shine some unique and profound appreciation for what it is he has to show them. And the item he has chosen to show them was acquired with the utmost difficulty at the greatest expense. So what do you think of this opening here? Like, we basically, we're only in two locations. We're in a parkade where these four people meet and they all have this invitation where they get picked up and then they go to this house, this called the Sandpiper House. What do you think of, you already said that it grabbed you right from the beginning, but like, is there anything specific about it that you liked?
Yeah, for sure. I really like the introduction of the characters, because we don't really know anything about them until they're all together. We're not really learning any specific thing about anybody. We just all of a sudden are all together and they bring up why they think they're together because they don't know either. They don't know why they've been selected for this viewing, got this invitation. And one of them just says, oh, we've all been on TV. That's the only connection. Like, we've all been on a late show. That's our connection. How about you, to like the newcomer? How about you? Have you been on a late show before? So right away, you don't get like very specific information, but you get enough information to know that like they're famous enough to be on a late show, each and every one of them. So, you know, there's something going on here with these people being like, yeah, at least good at something or famous for some reason. So I like the slow kind of revealing of who each person is. And it starts at that. Like, that's all you get kind of in that moment where, you know, get kind of recognize, some people recognize the musician, you know, things like that. I like that slow reveal as we go on. And then you kind of learn more about their characters as you're just sitting and talking with them. It just felt very much like I was there, you know, getting to know them as well.
Yeah, I really loved that. Kind of the way that we got to the people in the parkade was by following one of them driving there.
Yeah.
And it was just so, so 80s with the camera just behind, like sitting in the back seat, looking at this dashboard of an 80s vehicle, and all the gauges were orange and vibrant. And with like the very tastefully done lens flares that are all over the place in this episode and look so well done. And then outside in the parkade, all the lights are green. So, like, Panos, he's always complementary colors. It's just, it's always like bang, bang, one, two, like orange, green, red, blue. His scenes are set up that exact way. And this was no different. So this car is just like, you can hear the engine just purring as this car is ripping up the ramp. And then it parks and this person gets out. And then the four of them are there. And someone else is there in a van waiting to take them to the house, and that just kind of kicks everything into gear. So we're there for like 3 minutes and then we go to the house for the rest of the time. One other thing that happened, after they got picked up by this guy, Hector, he's in it a little bit, but
yeah,
they're talking in the back of this like cargo van and he says like, no more talking, please. Your host would like you to listen to this music instead. And from that point on, he like presses play here. This weird like synth wave track kicks in. And for the rest of the episode, all of the music that we hear, these people, the actors, like the characters in the viewing are also hearing. So normally the music is done as a way to accentuate the mood for us, the viewer. But in this case, it was done to accentuate the mood for the characters in the actual piece of work here. So you can kind of lose that from time to time. You forget that they're hearing it as well, but they often like will change the track even, and something else will come on and they'll be like, oh, this is a very interesting sounding track. And it's like almost exactly what you're thinking. You're like, oh, this is weird and unique, but it's so strange that I've never really encountered something where the characters are listening to the exact same thing that we are.
Yeah, totally. I loved this. I, like you said, I forgot multiple times that they would be hearing the exact same thing I'm listening to. So there's like multiple times where they're talking and this music's playing and I'll just like, it'll clue into me. I'll just be like, oh yeah, they're all hearing this track too. This track is playing in the room that they are sitting in while they're talking. I thought it was very cool.
I would have to say, as great of a performance that Peter Weller puts in, the star of the viewing is this house, the Sandpiper House.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I want this house more than I've ever wanted anything in my life.
It's like, wild.
If I would ever possibly win a lottery, I'm just getting this house made.
Right. Totally.
It's so gorgeous. It's just, it's a trip, man. It just feels so warm and inviting, but yet it's so weird. It's like full on 70s. So the movie, I'll call it a movie, whatever. It takes place in 1979. So you're getting those late 70s, early 80s vibes. That is in the house, but also it's like sci-fi. It's like a spaceship. That the room that they spend most of the time in, I could see that being a room in a Predator ship. That could be something that they have. And oh man, I think they say in the episode, one of the guys says that he thinks the architecture is brutalist and Aztec in design. And you can definitely see those as well. Like definitely the Aztec, the way hallways are shaped. Oh man, just the all concrete. Everything's orange. You're in an orange lit house. It really blows me away. I really like that place.
While I was watching it reminded me a lot of Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049. I'm not sure, like just the feel, maybe it's that, you know, 80s synth feel type thing, but also like Blade Runner 2049, there were, you know, buildings that kind of look like this on the inside. So it definitely made me want to go back and watch both those movies.
Yep. Yeah, definitely a similar vibe for sure. Like, I don't know what the right wording is, but like kind of how visually stunning the lighting is in Blade Runner. Yeah. Just like the neon, how the neon really like pops out at you. Yeah. That's what's going on here, but it's not neon. It's just like, just very simple colors. In this case, orange. There's a couple scenarios where there's some blue, there's a bit of green, but against just like a black background, that light and that color pops as much as neon would.
Yeah.
But this house, they have like flowers that were custom hybrid from a lady in California.
Right.
And she's like made them for the house specifically. So it gives the house a unique scent. There's music playing in the house that was made like to accentuate the house by an artist from Italy. And the you know, Peter Weller's character here, Lionel Lasseter, he's like, he's so fucking cool, man. He, the way he talks and his presence and how cool he is, he's just explaining it. And he's just like, you know, this was made from an artist in Italy who none of you will ever have heard of before. Yeah, he made it custom for my house. I'm hoping.
And he made it custom for like that room.
Yeah, right.
He's like, he made it custom for this seating room.
It's so cool, man. Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. I just like love the way he carries himself in this. Some of his one-liners, and he's got like small quotes that are great. He's got big quotes that are great, but maybe I'll just back up for a second. So we've got Lionel Lasseter. Okay. He's the one who's invited everybody to his house. The people he's invited, you have a Charlotte. She's an astrophysicist. She's kind of like your level-headed character.
Yeah.
You have Guy Landon. He's a very famous novelist. He's hilarious. He's like the humor in this. And this is a very humor-filled episode as well. Like I'm laughing several times throughout this, as serious as it is.
Oh, for sure.
You have Targ Reinhardt, who's a psychic. He's like the out there dreamer.
Yeah.
And you have Randall Roth, who's a music producer, and he's kind of like deeply open and honest about things.
Yeah.
And then along with Lasseter is at his house, he has this guy Hector who drove them there, and he has a Dr. Zara, and she's like his personal drug doctor. She like makes new and brilliant concoctions for him to take. Like that's her
That'll
job.
That'll enhance his mind, man.
It's awesome. She was wonderful. She was gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. Sophia Boutella is great. I love her.
But that's your team of characters. I'd have to think that you'd agree that Lionel Lasseter was kind of like the star.
Yeah, he's totally taking control of the whole thing. He's like running the show, trying to convince people that, you know, that this thing he's going to show is the greatest, most amazing thing in the entire universe. And like he is very cool, and he sucks you in with that coolness that he has. But, you know, I think by the time we get to the end, it's interesting that I feel like I can see through some of the characters while the light's shining. I feel like that is at the end. We get to that point where it's like it's a little bit bullshit. you know, by the time we get to the end.
You think he's putting on like a facade?
Not even just a facade, but just maybe not bullshit. Just like it's just the arrogance, you know, like I like how quick, like, I don't want to spoil the ending right now, but I like how quick the ending goes.
Sure.
And I think that shows me the arrogance of this group of people who just sat there and talked for 40 minutes and then the ending's quite quick.
Okay. I didn't really get arrogance from anybody.
Okay.
I kind of, like, from him, I really got experience. Just the way that he carries himself for, like, the first 40 minutes and some of the stuff that he's talking about. Like, he tells one guy, like, I don't know what the context was, I forget, but it's just a great line. He says, I have seen things that would make you shit your mind, Kemosabe. He says that to one of the guys. Like, what a elegant way to say that. Like... that he's seen things that nobody else has.
Make you shit your mind.
Make you shit your mind.
Wow. It's a long way to go. It's a long way for that brain to go down out your butt.
Yeah, I think he's very confident. He's experienced. He kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Anything he wants, he can purchase. Price is no problem. Whatever it's going to cost, he'll pay for it. It just depends how badly he wants it. He gets them all to the house. They have no idea what's going on. They go into this room that we've spoken of, and sitting there waiting for them is everybody's favorite drink. You know,
yeah, cool.
He just knows what they want, and then from there he slowly progresses them into doing harder and harder drugs.
Yeah,
he wants them all on the same level of being fucked up, to view this item that he has brought them there to show. So what we get is we get them drinking, we get them smoking marijuana, they're doing cocaine with something special sprinkled on top by the doctor. Lassiter has already done heroin.
Right, yeah.
I love those shots, very like artistic shots of that whole thing happening.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so like it's just them talking about a whole bunch of different things, doing all these different substances. Some of them don't want to partake in this. Like you get there, and Randall, the music producer, he's like, he's quit drinking and he's quit smoking. So the first drink waiting for him is a tea. And they slowly like work him into the mood, like, come on, Randall, like get into it. And he starts drinking. You get people who've never smoked weed before smoking weed. Most of them haven't done coke before, and they all just kind of like get really, really drunk and high on their way to viewing this item.
Yeah, I love how they've crafted out this entire scenario. It's so mysterious. This house is so wild and amazing. You've never seen anything like it. You've never seen any room like this. And so when you get to this scenario of just like increasing, you know, to harder alcohol and then harder drugs as we keep going up, you get to cocaine and the guy who's the psychic's like, oh, I don't want to do that. That's going to get in the way of my psychic power. He's like, oh, I'm holding. And then it finally gets to him and he's like, oh, I'm holding up the line here. I don't know if I can do it. And Dr. Zara just says, hey, if you're ever going to do cocaine, now's the time. And it's like, yeah, I guess that's true. Because like, look at the scenario you're in. It's like they've built up this scenario as it being just like the most incredible thing that's ever going to happen in your life. So if you're ever going to do it, you should do it now.
Yeah.
I wanted to say, I'm not sure if there is any ties or anything. This is the only one that sort of stood out. And it's that Guy Landon, there's like a Stephen King character who is a novelist whose his name's not Guy Landon, but his name's like Steve Landon or something. And so I was just wondering if there was some sort of connection to Stephen King, that if you could think of like being in 79 and it's like, okay, if you could get just like the greatest writing mind in the room who's like so creative and it sells out everywhere, you know, it's probably Stephen King. So I was wondering if that was, you know, some sort of connection that they picked out a similar name to a character he has in one of his books.
Yeah, sure. It could have been. So one of the like great dialogue pieces that Lassiter had was he's telling a story about this whiskey that he brings out. So after he's gotten everybody to finally like have a drink of alcohol, he brings out some whiskey. That's your next logical step up. He says, the bottle is 50 years old and from a distillery that opened in 1921 in a small suburb of Kyoto, where the water was so revered that legendary tea masters had been going there for centuries to perfect their brews. The bottle he's holding survived aerial bombing in World War II that damaged the distillery. It then fell to the ground in an earthquake in 1946, chipping the bottle but leaving it intact. It made its way across all the chaos, all of the potential destruction, longer than many human lives, to us here tonight in 1979 for us to share and enjoy. So this is the type of peer pressure that you're getting. You're in this, this beautiful environment. You've got this character who's so charismatic, just forcing this stuff upon you. And there's really no way to say no. And then at the end of it, he's like, once we all get wasted enough, I'm going to go and show you the reason I brought you here.
Like, so weird.
It's so interesting.
Like, we're all going to get together. We're going to get so wasted. We're going to do all the drugs. And then I'll show you something.
And they have great conversations about like what each of them are doing. And Lasseter's like pumping them all up. Like he loves the book that the astrophysicist is writing. He loves the musician's music. He's like, what would it take for you to write the music for my next house? He's like, sorry, I didn't ask you to write the music for this house, but I have you in mind.
Are you offended?
Are you offended? I have you in mind for my house in Ecuador. And what would it take? You know? And they like dig into some pretty deep stuff, and it gets pretty heavy. It gets pretty light at times. It's kind of all over the map. And yeah, like you get near the end and you're wondering what the hell is going to happen.
Yeah.
And they kind of just drop this fucking wild ending in your lap in like the last 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I would say up until now, anybody who hasn't seen this, you can still go and watch this and everything will be great. We haven't really spoiled anything too much. But this is going to spoil everything once we get to this last 10 minutes. So Lasseter basically says it's time. And the camera takes us down this incredible looking hallway into another incredible looking room. Everything is orange except for this hole in the ceiling, which is blue. Looks really gorgeous. There's a stand in the middle of the room and there's something on it. It looks like a small asteroid. What are you thinking, Dean, as we walk into this room? Because I'll be honest with you, I've seen this probably 6 times.
Oh, okay.
So I've lost my feeling of what it was like the first time to watch this. And kind of like the wanderlust and the amazement of what I was feeling going down this hallway finally and getting into this room. What was it doing for you? I'm curious.
I thought as soon as I saw this thing on the table, I was thinking it was something alien. It looked very, very alien-like. It actually looked to me like it was like a xenomorph, just like crumpled up or something. Like it was like the body of one, but like kind of bigger and fuller, but all like shriveled, like all crumpled up. So I thought it was either like, a skeleton or a fossil of some sort of alien. That's basically what was my thoughts. It definitely had like this alien nature to it.
Yeah, they do kind of get that across pretty well.
Yeah.
It almost has like the black. I see what you're saying with xenomorph. It has like the blackness of their shell, but then the shimmer that the light gets reflected off of. There's something like otherworldly about it. So they all get in there. Lasseter says he doesn't know what it is. And Charlotte, she says she thinks it's a meteorite, but it doesn't show any of the signs of passing through the atmosphere. Lasseter says that they've run some tests. It's impervious to X-rays, and it can't be found on the periodic table. So the people kind of like experience the moment differently. Like the novelist guy, the humorous guy, he's just like, oh, this sucks. Like, this is what you wanted to show us? Yeah, I don't care about this. The other people seem very interested. The psychics, he's like, he senses something. He can, like, sense an energy in it.
I like when the psychic's like, have you ever had any psychics in this room before? And Peter Weller's like, yeah, you right now.
Like the beauty of that was his delivery of it, because he delivers it like he's upset. And I kind of get that from Peter Weller's character.
Totally.
I feel like he's so beyond these four people. Like he's experienced so much more than they have, that they were doing things that irritated him all night. And there's several examples of that that we didn't really talk about. But this one that you're mentioning, I love the undertones to the way he delivered it.
Yeah.
So Randall lights up a cigarette. This is more great delivery from Peter Weller. As Randall lights up the cigarette, and Peter, I'll just call him Peter Weller from now on. Peter Weller says, Randall, there's no smoking in this room. And Randall's like, oh, sorry. And he throws a cigarette down on the ground. And then they cut to like a couple other people just saying a couple brief things. And then they cut back to Randall and he's lighting up a joint. And Peter Weller says, Randall, there's no smoking in this room. And Randall says, Randall's just eyes are like piercing on this item, right? And he's smoking this joint and he's like, oh, I didn't know joints counted as smoking. And Weller's like, regardless, there's no smoking in this room.
Yeah.
And he puts the joint out. And like 3 seconds later, Randall lights up another joint. And Weller's like, Randall, there's no smoking in this room. And Randall like approaches the object and blows the smoke into it. And the object absorbs, like sucks in the smoke.
Yeah.
And then there's like some noises happening. There's like a high pitched frequency. It looks like it's hurting people's heads. They're holding their heads. Then Lassiter, Peter Weller, puts his hands on the item. It starts cracking like an egg, and it opens to reveal a living organism.
Yeah. Great. It was an egg.
It was an egg. Yeah. And it was like this organism inside is disgusting too.
Oh yeah. And it's like growing as it's like, so it cracks all the way down and it looks like it might be empty because it's so small. Like it's this huge egg and it cracks and you can't really see anything. It's like keeps cracking and there's nothing in there. And then right at the bottom, there's just this like little orange goo mess thing that just starts like forming its way into something. It's really kind of gross and gooey.
It was gross. It was like a small,
it's organic,
a small like alien creature and then goo, and the goo kind of like made it grow larger as it was on the pedestal, but then to get off the pedestal it just turned entirely to goo and like ran down the sides. People, they're staring at the object, their heads are hurting, blood starts coming out of people's noses, someone's face melts, Guy Landon's head explodes. Charlotte and Randall run out of the room.
Smart decision.
Peter Weller's just kind of sitting on the ground and this goo like makes its way over to him and goes into his mouth and basically uses him to form into like a walking humanoid.
Yeah.
It's like combined with him somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, like the goo covers all over him and then is basically now him. Like using his body to walk around, but like by covering it up.
Yeah. And man, this creature at this point, like this 6 foot tall, gooey creature, this is nightmare fuel. This is just, one of the most terrifying creatures I've seen for like what it looks like, the face it has, because it sort of has like a human face still, but not quite. Looks like the face is melted off, the sounds that it's making. It's got two like tentacles or like hooks coming out of its back. Really,
I think the tentacles are a cool addition because they look like horns. You know, they look like they should be hard and spiky like horns when they first started coming out of the creature. Yeah. That's what I thought they were.
Totally.
But they're also like tentacle like. They're also very like malleable. They move around. They shift. They're very gooey. So it's like it's this weird thing for my brain to be like, those look like they're horns, but they're also look like they might be soft. So yeah, it was really weird. I liked that addition.
Yeah, it was really neat. This Hector guy, He comes in with a machine gun, starts gunning this thing down, does nothing. The tentacles basically electrocute him and explode him.
Right, right.
So this thing's extremely powerful. Charlotte, this is so good. Charlotte and Randall, they've like hightailed it out of the place. They've grabbed the Ferrari, which is in the driveway, and they take off and are going so fast. Beautiful Ferrari, by the way. This like green, probably my dream car. I don't know about in the mint green, but I love this Ferrari. Yeah. And just the way that the lens flare kind of worked on the taillights as they're peeling away, because everything had a lens flare on it, but not to the point where you're like, oh, they're just using lens flare to make it like look stylized. You could tell how much effort they put into making the lens flares look good. And almost like you're the one who's having problems seeing the picture normally, you know, like,
for sure. Yeah.
I do believe they're going for the idea that like they want you as the viewer of the viewer to be fucked up as well and to be like inebriated and to have things kind of like blurry for you. And the way that they do all the lens flares and stuff like that accentuates it. There's like some shots of like the glass of whiskey and there's a giant lens flare coming off that. I think it's tastefully done. I know some people don't like lens flares, but I think they did a good job with it. But Ferrari like ripping down the street as far as that engine purring. There's a rabbit's foot in the rearview mirror, which is such a 80s thing. That's so classic. Nice. I don't know why people did that. It's so stupid. But
they're lucky, right?
Yeah, it's for luck.
Yeah, they got the luck. It worked.
I guess so. Yeah, you're right about that. Yeah, they get away. But for how long?
Yeah.
The creature walks out of the house. It's moving so slowly. It's uncomfortable how slow it's moving.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, at any point, it might just stop and live here. Like, live in this exact spot that it's standing.
Like, it's moving at the speed of, like, a sloth. But I think that's very interesting because I feel like it's this alien entity who has taken over a human body and doesn't really know how to work it. It's like it's taking its very first steps ever, but it's with a grown adult. So
it was just born.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So it's really interesting. It goes into a large sewer pipe. Then we see it come out the other end of the sewer pipe at the edge of a city. And then it starts heading towards the city. And as it does, we start seeing flickering and malfunctioning of lights and billboards. And the world is now completely doomed.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
In the end.
I love the lights. I love the light flicker and the powers kind of going off in places. It's awesome. We already saw this thing shock somebody to death instantly.
It's been melting people's faces. It's exploding their brains. It can electrocute people with its back horns. This thing is not being stopped.
No. It's like melted their faces like mentally. Like, or I don't know if it was like making the room hot or just like
it was like telekinesis. Like the psychic said at one point, he said, it's probing me. So it's
right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then his face melted.
Great.
So that's what the rest of the world has in store for them.
Great. Great. Great.
Yeah. Very cool. Then a really nice touch at the end, because as we mentioned earlier, there's been music playing this entire time. Like, this house just has music playing.
Yeah.
As soon as it ends, the credits, completely silent.
Cool.
There's nothing. Yeah. Just dead air.
Love it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's really cool.
Fun.
So I'm a big fan of the viewing. I think people should check it out.
Yeah, it rules. I think
miss anything? Miss anything there?
No, I just wanted to say, like, I think the demise of everybody in the room and how it happened so quickly, this is kind of what I was getting to earlier. I think there's an idea of people, you know, you got the greatest minds in a room, you got this guy who's experienced everything, people thinking they have a level of control, and then they go in to see this thing, and it just breaks out and kills everybody instantly. It literally takes over the guy who obsesses about it. It takes over his body. The one guy who had quit smoking, his smoking is what like made it wake up. So it's like a thing where you brought him in, you made him smoke, and then he fucked everything up. I don't think like the astrophysicist like helped at all. Every suggestion, you know, she had was like, oh yeah, we did that. You know, like just Peter Weller getting annoyed with everybody in the room. Like no one was actually helping out. They were just like the greatest minds in this room. They surrounded this egg. It broke out and killed everybody. And I loved that ending to like the whole buildup of the 40 minutes of us being like, yeah, okay, these are the top of the top people. Like, it's going to be great. What are we going to go figure out? And then they just instantly die. It's like that control. You think you have it, but you don't.
Yeah. I loved it. I just loved how long you build up to this moment and then how fast everything falls apart.
Instantly.
And as soon as it starts happening, you just kind of wish you were back in that room hanging out with everybody again. You're like, because it was so warm and cozy. But all you have to do is just rewind and watch it again. You get all the warm feelings again. But
great.
Right on. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for tuning in. If you'd like to help support us here at Talking Back, you know how to do that. You can share an episode with a friend. You can head on over to Patreon and sign up to be a patron, get some exclusive episodes. You can even help us out by heading over to bfopnetwork.com and checking out some of the other amazing nostalgia-based podcasts in our network. There's so much cool stuff over there that we promise you'll like. And Dean, thanks for joining.
Thank you, Tim.
Are we still spoiling stuff?
It's up to you.
Well, we'll throw one more in.
Okay.
One more and see where we go from there. Our patrons will already know about this one, though, because during our time travel warm-up, we share all of the time travel movies that we're going to be doing for the year, so they all know what the list is. And next week just happens to be the first Monday of the month. It's a time travel movie. It's called Predestination. You and I have never heard of it before.
Nope.
We're going to check it out. Hopefully it's good. And that's what's coming up next week. If you want to check that movie out ahead of time and play along at home as we go through that, here's your chance to do that. Dean, did I thank you for joining or no?
You did. You could thank me again.
No, that's okay. Thanks, everybody.
Okay, just one time, yeah.
Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, everybody, I'm Corey.
And I'm Zach, and we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.